Hey, this is Keith Wooden, and welcome to Story Mosaics today. Thanks for joining us. As you have, we have kind of a group that's making this a habit. And I was telling Eric the other day that we have about 95 different places around the world where people are tuning in. Some of them in one city, some of them on different venues and different ways of joining us. Please, one of the things you can do for us always is to like and subscribe. About 38 of you have subscribed to this and you follow it on a regular basis. That the additional help that it does for us is not only does it move us up in those algorithms so that more people can discover us, but it also means that as soon as something drops and is downloaded, you'll get notification on it. Hey, I'm so pleased to have someone join me today, Kelly Camp. I've known Kelly just a short period of time, but the deal was, Kelly, that it was pretty cool because I heard that if you get a breakfast with Kelly Camp, he always pays the first time. I'll just be honest with you. My motivation was pretty shallow. Okay. I forget, where did we go that first time? Do you remember? Do you
mornings in Fishers? That's a great breakfast.
Time. It is. It was a great breakfast, and sat there, and we ended up what was to be a 35 minute conversation ended up into like 2.5 hours. But it was a great time to spend with you, Kelly. And so thanks for that breakfast. But in that breakfast, one of the coolest things was I got to hear your story. And that's what Story Mosaics is all about. The essence of Story Mosaics, our mission is simple. And I don't think I've ever shared this with you, Kelly, but our mission is pretty simple. We believe that everyone has a story and that not only does their story matter, but we want to help come along people and tell their stories and even tell them better. And so that's the case with this is I had a chance to hear your story. And I think I even mentioned to you, that's a story we need to hear on Story Mosaics. So, you know what? I want you just to take us back to one moment. In fact, I think we're going to structure this uniquely because we're going to look at several turning points in your life because your story has a lot of intricacies and warps and woofs and weaving. But I want you to tell us a few of those moments in your life that really were became hinge points in your development. Can you do that for us, Kelly? Let's start with number one.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, so I would say, moment number one is, you always have to kind of look at a little bit of first formation. And I'm a preacher's kid, raised in my father was a Baptist minister. And I would say, the first big moment is probably in junior high, when I kind of sat back and I looked at everything that was going on around me in that Baptist environment and lovely people, love my parents, I don't have any of that good old fashioned, bitterness towards parent thing, but there was just something that I just kept thinking, this just isn't right. There's something here that I'm just having a hard time getting behind. I love my dad. I mean, he's my hero. And I love my mom. We've got a great home, but something's missing in the way that this, and I hate to say branding, but there was something going on from a branding standpoint that I just couldn't get behind even at an early age. But I love my folks, and I just had made a decision as a young man that I'll ride this out. I'm 4 to 6 years away from being 18 years old. I'll get out of here and then I'll do what I want.
So sometimes
that's kind of what I did.
Yeah, sometimes people think that it has something to do with our parents on that one. No, sometimes it can just be what's going on inside of us and looking into that. And I'm going to put religion in quotation marks there because it's not about the relationship with God. It's about the religion that's coming through to us. And there's some big questions that evolve. And so you started to have some questions that became now that then started to shape your life over the next few years then. Mm-hmm. And did it do that slowly or did you have an out and out rebellion? What took place over those next few years?
No, it probably happened when, now at that point, you just kind of, you're skating in life.
Yep.
You're just going through high school, you're getting into college. And another big event I would say is finding out that my dad was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, as well as Alzheimer's a few months into his retirement. And I had this voice trigger in my head that said, this is what God does to guys like your dad when they give him 31 or 41 years of their lives. Look at that. And I heard that, and I didn't talk to anybody about that. And that's what started me down a road that honestly, Keith, lasted from 18, 19, or 20 until about 44 years old. I knew how to play church so I could attract a Christian girl to marry me, and we could start out, you know, cute little family in our 20s, and you could be incredibly successful. But by the time I'm in my early 40s, I always tell people, you know, running from God is hard work.
Wow, Kelly.
It's really hard work. It really takes its toll on you. You can, from the outside, you can look really good. You can play church. You can know about God, even maybe have a little bit of sensitivity of knowing. Like I always told my mom, you know, after I had what I would call my redemption moment with God, is I always told my mom, I would go out and have a great time doing what the world told me was supposed to be fun. But when I hit my pillow at night, I knew my little mother was praying for me at night. I said, you ruined all my sinning for me.
You know, it's been told to me several times, and I've said it many times. If sinning has joy for a season, fun for a season, but it's not a forever thing. And if you're not having fun when you're sinning, you're not doing it right. You know.
That's right.
It's the moments where your head hits the pillow. You know what? So I need to dial it back just a little bit, because was it bitterness that started to grow in your heart, or what was growing there, and what did it feel like? What did you sense in that time frame between that 18 and 40 year old? What was the emotion? What were the emotions that were brewing inside of you?
Yeah. The anxiety of, you see your hero, somebody you love going through, you know, a hero, a guy, like, think about running 5 miles a day with your dad when you're a senior in high school training for soccer, and then a few years go by and you see him as a shriveled little guy in a wheelchair. Bitterness and resentment and the inability to see that, you know, God's ways are greater than my ways, and the ability to have conversations with him later about how he never saw that with bitterness, how he watched God even use that sickness to advance the kingdom. So, you know, it's one of those things I wish sometimes, it's okay, I can't go back, but sometimes I think about, I wonder if that 14-year-old boy would have felt safe enough to have a conversation with somebody about, I don't know why I'm thinking what I'm thinking, but I have a sensitivity towards God, but I'm not sure I like this brand of religion.
Yeah.
I
think, Kelly, you know what? I think that's such a difficult thing. And I think it would be difficult. You know, one of the things that is true of the church where you're one of the pastors there as the executive pastor about Heartland is there is a very welcoming atmosphere for those youth. But I still think it would be difficult for them to put into words even what they're feeling in their faith at that point. And you called it the formation of your faith and actually the deconstruction of your faith in that 14-year-old. So I don't know whether you would be able to or not, but I know you were on this arc. But here's the thing that when you were telling me this story that amazed me was this, absolutely incredible, is that you were terribly successful during those years.
Crazy. Yeah, crazy successful. In the business world, I had an unbelievable 38-year career. And again, very focused. I mean, a lot of things I grew up learning. I mean, I watched my dad build a very large, successful church. I mean, he was a great leader. There's so many positives that still came from that situation.
Sure.
You know, I and success is just success. And I actually was telling a guy today at lunch, I'll never forget one time we were out in Dallas and we sold a, you know, $250 million IT project, and everybody's jumping around and we're high-fiving. You go out for the nice dinner and the drinks. And, you know, by the time you get back to your hotel and you're laying down in the hotel room, my head hit the pillow and I thought, okay, well, great. Now we got to do that again, or can we get one bigger? There was never fulfillment. Now, later on when I was able to start following Christ and made a decision at 50 years old to go really aggressively, what we say around Heartland is going all in, like, hey, this is enough. Enough's enough. I'm going all in. This guy's, you know, my pastor's asking me, why don't you give God a year of your life? And if you look back and you don't see a difference, then it is what it is. But I think you'll look back and you'll see a change. So,
you know, Kelly, I'm going to kind of put a full stop on that 50-year-old Kelly, because I want to unpack a little bit more of those. That's a lot of years. And yet you're registering. And I want you to kind of describe what it felt like. You said that there was this never being fully satisfied, that you just felt like, okay, I got to turn around and do this again. So there's never being fully satisfied. So there's this rumbling of discontent. What were some of the other emotions? You know, were you thumbing your nose at God? What was happening to God in that long period of time? Or just was he absent?
Just absent. I mean, just do the thing, like, hey, you're a preacher's kid, you're having children, your wife wants you to go to church. Okay, yeah, I know how to do church. I can get up and make it to a Sunday morning and literally have zero impact on my life Monday through Saturday. You know, so we talk a lot about, I understand what it means like for my Sunday through Saturday to look the same. I honestly didn't know that. It turned into a selfishness and a, but an under, okay, so from a feelings and an emotional standpoint, an undercurrent of bitterness, resentment, and then it started affecting as I got into my mid-30s, late-30s. Now it's starting to creep out. It's affecting my relationship with my wife. It's our marriage is starting to fall apart. And then at this point, I'm getting old enough to know I don't like who I'm becoming when I'm by myself. So I know how to act and fake in the business world. And every now and then, occasionally, I can go to church with my wife and kids and I can fake, you know, closing my eyes, doing a prayer. But the problem was then all of a sudden I needed to have a little help to get to sleep. And so you just think one bourbon's fun at dinner, but four will get me to sleep and I don't have to think about my life. And then that started an ugliness of you know, alcohol, drinking and that addiction.
Would you, you use the term addiction. Did it get to a full-blown addiction in your life then?
And I hid that as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, were you hiding? So basically your life was a lot of masks that you were wearing and a lot of hiding.
Always hiding, always mask. And again, it's just so crazy to me how, again, if you would have met me at 35, you would have said, wow, this guy's got it together.
Yep.
And actually nothing was together. Nothing was together.
Can I tell you, Kelly, because I probably would have been that way, that person that met you at 35 and said, man, Kelly's got it all together. He's got all this, you know, he's got financial resources. He's got image. He's got, you know, power in his world that he's living in. He's got people that are looking to him for their leadership as well. I might have said, well, you know, what more does Kelly need? And in fact, I may not have put my finger on the pulse of your spiritual need. But somehow at 50 years old, this thing started to crumble around you. And you went someplace where you heard this truth that changed your life. Pinpoint that, because this is that very important transition moment. Help me understand what happened there.
Yeah, this is the transition moment into, if you want to call it, the good old gutter.
The gutter came first.
Gotta have the gutter.
Okay.
You gotta have the gutter to wait. If you're apparently Scottish and Irish and stubborn, you need to have the gutter.
And so, Kelly, you are.
So I'm in my early 40s and my marriage has fallen apart. So my marriage is ended in divorce. And now, again, that's not a huge thing in the circle that I live in and grew up in, you know. And so now all of a sudden here comes, not only am I wearing mask and hiding everything, well, now I've got shame, condemnation. I've completely convinced myself that I've ruined my children. And so there's no redemption for them. They're they're going to limp and be crippled forever emotionally. And just now I'm taken, you're a fraud. And now I'm adding shame and condemnation to it. And I still don't understand why, if I was God, I wouldn't have done it. But for whatever crazy reason, against the advice of my counselor, who said the last thing on earth you need to be involved in is a relationship. Do not date. You are messed up. I had reached the point where I went to a counselor, and I just had to swallow my pride as a man and say, there's nothing wrong with counseling. It has nothing to do with my faith or
thank you
lack
for
of
saying
faith
that,
or,
Kelly. Yeah.
It just, you're a mess, dude. Just take the mask off, put the mirror up. It's you. And get to a counselor. So I got to a counselor, immediately told me, you know, we're not dating for 2 years. Immediately the next week after I had made a vow that I would never date for 2 years, I have a mutual friend introduce me to the lady that is my wife now. But we start dating over about a 3 to 6 month period. And all of a sudden I realize I'm not really dating anyone else. And neither is she. And we're having these conversations. And for the sake of length of the show, I would just say, it basically came down to a conversation she was my girlfriend at the time, where Lori said, you without God and me living without God has not worked. my marriage has ended in a divorce. I'm a mess spiritually. You're a mess. We're a mess, Kelly. We need to do this differently. And so I had an opportunity 2 weeks ago. One of my girlfriends invited me to this church. And when we were dating, as crazy as this sounds, sometimes church would come up. And most of the time, there was bitterness and venom from me.
Yeah, yeah.
But for whatever reason, I would explain to her what a church should look like. Don't ask me how a guy like me should know what a church
should look like. As twisted as that might be in your, you know, in what you've experienced. Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, somehow in my head, I had said, you know, this is what a church would be. It's loving. It's welcoming. It doesn't worry about what version of the Bible you carry. It's not concerned whether you have a three-piece suit on and your hair is short or you're wearing flip-flops. And just, I had all this in my head. No theology behind it. There's no brains behind it. Just me spouting my what it should have been like. And she says, hey, I think I kind of found this church that you described over the last 3 to 4 months, and I think we should go. And I'm like, well, that's a hard no.
And then, oh, gee.
Yeah, I'm not going. So she's like, I got this church. I'm telling you, you're going to love it. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not going. And then a few more weeks went by, and then all of a sudden I was smart enough to realize she's probably going to dump me.
Oh, wow.
And stop dating me if I don't go. So what do? I reach into my trunk of masks.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think I can fake church better than anybody. I'm a preacher's kid. I know how to do church. I know how to fake it. So I'll go in there. I'll suffer through this every Sunday. I did it previously in my other marriage. I got this relationship. I'll just fake it in this relationship. So I go in there, and to my surprise, I wanted to get her kind of riled up. So I purposefully wore some shorts, flip-flops, a golf shirt, and a hat, knowing that she was just going to be mortified when I walk into this church with everyone carrying these huge Bibles and their suits and all that. And I walk in, and there's probably 40 guys in the lobby, you know, getting coffee and doing stuff, just dressed like me. So I was like, one defense went down.
Check one off.
Yeah, check one off. Okay, not bad. Set in the very back corner, very last row.
Oh, man.
For 6 years.
6 years you were attending, but that's it. You were just there.
That's it.
Wow, Kelly. Now, did that ease the condemnation? Did that ease the guilt? No, it wasn't erasing any of that, was it?
No.
In fact, it may have felt a little bit more intensified, huh?
Yeah, so then I decided that what I would do is, okay, the bitterness thing isn't working necessarily. And in all honesty, there's some of this stuff where, you know, we end up getting married. Terrible idea. People where we were at should not have been getting married. I mean, we've defied all the odds. I don't want to bore you with it, but everything any counselor ever told us to do, we didn't do. When they told us not to do something, we did it. Just a train wreck. I always tell people, Lori and I rolled into Heartland Church in 2010 on the crazy train, and I was driving it, and she was shoveling coal into the engine. I mean, it was a freak show.
Oh.
And but she's got this great, kind heart, and that just started chipping away a little bit at me. And then, you know, now your kids are in high school and early college age, and now all of a sudden I am feeling like, yikes, dude, you're a fraud, and you got these kids, and it's not going great with them. And so then I just kind of developed this attitude of, I'm going to watch this guy preach every weekend, and I'm going to wait for him to bring hell, fire, brimstone, and shame and condemnation.
Wow.
And he just kept bringing love, and then he started making me mad because I'm thinking, this guy might be a fraud because he's not coming at me with all the guilt stuff. So what's going on here? And it just kind of wore me down. So we went out on a Saturday night 10 years ago in June. This summer will be 11 years, or 10 years this June.
Wow.
And we went out to a party. I had a great time. I roll into church the next day because that's what fakes do. You know, I'm a committed fake. Let me tell you, I'm a committed mask wearer. So I'm going to show up, and I got to tell you, I don't think I was drunk, but I definitely was still feeling it and hungover. And I'll never forget Darren's during his message saying, I want you to understand this is a guilt-free zone. I don't care where you're at today. God sees you completely different in your future. Matter of fact, I don't even care. There's probably a guy sitting in here today that you're probably out last night. For all I know, you're still drunk. So you have two realizations right then. One, did she come to a previous service and say that my husband's coming, he's still tied one on? Or, wow, when he said that I call him these moments, it's everything that we're trying to do from a standpoint of what we're doing at our church right now is, can you create a moment where I could hear the Holy Spirit? And I, for the first time, I just heard the Holy Spirit say, like, listen, just listen.
And it's so neat because it's no longer Darren saying something. It's God speaking to you for the first time in 20 some years.
Yeah.
And he's talking to you through the Holy Spirit, and you've got this God moment. And you're hearing him.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was so cool. And so that was the day that he just said, why if you'd like to pray this prayer, you know, like God, something needs to change. And you know what, God, I need to change. And I'm doing this. I raise my hand, and like everything I do, I go all in. I mean, I feel like when I want to sin, I 100% sin. When I want to wear a mask, I wear a mask 100%. If I'm going all in, I'm going to go all in. But I didn't know what to do. You know, I didn't know what to do. So I did seek him out in the lobby. I said, I don't know what to do. And I gave him a brief synopsis. I gave him what you and I have just been talking about for probably 20 minutes in 2 minutes.
Way to go. I got you.
And he says, can you come back every Sunday? You know, unless you're sick or out of town. I mean, can you be here every Sunday and just take notes and just ask God, like, God, show me, open my heart, help me to be open and hear you and change me. And then the other thing that he surmised very quickly was, you're going to have to get some strong, you're going to have to get some other strong men around you, and let me help you make some connections.
Wow. You know, Kelly, he read you to a T.
Yeah.
Because a weak person, you're a strong person, and a weak person would have been bowled over by you, and you would have ended up in the gutter again. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he read you to the T and said, I need you to pull, I need to help you find some strong men that will come alongside of you and speak truth into your life and not be afraid of you, but to speak truth into your life so that God can change the direction here. Yeah. Now, you pinpoint the time frame. You know it was in June that God finally spoke to you in a fresh way. And basically he said, give him a year of your life. Is that what you told me? Help me understand. What did he tell you at that point?
Yeah, that was the challenge. That's sort of, he does that every, almost every Sunday now. He just puts this challenge out there. I'm going to invite you to give God a year of your life. Pray this prayer with me. God, something needs to change. In fact, God, you know what? I need to change. And forgive me, you know, for the way I've lived. And I'm giving you my life. I'm turning my life over to you. And I had nothing to lose. I'm just telling you, the Kelly Camp approach to life by 50 years of age, it doesn't work. I mean, it just doesn't work. My way doesn't work. His way works. I can tell you, I think you and I talked about this at our breakfast. I can tell you that year, I like to be honest with men and get them to understand.
Thank you.
I want to tell you that first year was probably the hardest year of my life and of my walk, because I became, now I'm a double-minded man. It's like, it's one thing to just live without God. Now I want to live with him, but I've got this baggage. I've got this yesterday. I've got all those things I need to deal with. And so my Sunday was great. I go to church. I'm listening to Darren speak. I'm taking it all in. I'm taking notes. I'm in a group with two or three other really strong guys. And what we would do is, and I traveled a lot. I'm still traveling a lot with my work back in those days. What I'd do is I'd come back home. And on Wednesday night, I would sit down with those guys and they'd literally walk me through the notes. So what would happen is I'd get really excited about God on Sunday. By Wednesday, I'm on the struggle bus again. Those guys would kind of rekindle me, get me refocused. And then I could make it to Sunday again. But I still had my Friday and my Saturday night. And there's just one day where you've got to make that decision of, I've got to get some new friends. Wow. I've got to change some habits, not trying to be legalistic, but I've just got to get these other things that aren't helping me out of my life. And that was a tough year, because there would be weeks of great spiritual growth. And then for lack of a better word, I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now, is then I'd have a setback.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but what helped, and what I try to tell people when we sit down with them now to help them, what I've experienced is, be authentic.
Yes.
Then all of a sudden I could come, like if I was meeting with you back in those days, I could say, Keith, I got to tell you, here's where I'm struggling. And when you would look at me and go, hey, Kelly, I remember those days. Me yeah. too. And as soon as I realized you too, as soon as we made that connection that I wasn't the only one, what a feeling.
I've heard it said that friendships begin with just that phrase, you too. When we recognize we're in the same boat. And Kelly, thank you for not just whitewashing this and acting like, oh, this will be the easiest thing. If you just say, yes, I'll give God a year, then everything's good. No. Oh. Yes, it's not going to be that. That is where the warfare begins, because there's something big at stake. It's your spiritual integrity. It's your spiritual health that's at stake. And if he can undermine that again, he puts you right back into the 14-year-old, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
You know, he
for
would have sure. put you right back in there. Yeah. And so you started to see that progress, that those changes in your life. And take me to the crowning event, if you will, of you. Well, it's not actually, you already reached the peak. Now you have a change of direction also, because you've been employed in this field, making money, and that's what you're used to, and that's where you're focused, and that's, you know how to do that. But God kind of upsets your apple cart again, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does two really cool things you experience is, now all of a sudden it's a little bit of a, like, again, I'm a all inner, you know, I'll go all in, and I got a little zealous. But one of the things that was cool is then immediately after about a year, I'm getting what we made, let's say, my spiritual sea legs.
Okay.
Great way to say decisions. It. During that year, I've sat down with a few clients and said, hey guys, I've made a change in my value system. I'm doing some things differently spiritually. I've made a decision that I'm going to follow Christ and his teachings. And I need you guys to know that I can't do the things that we've done for the past 20 some years. And I even respect it, if you need to have somebody else assigned to your account or your team or your consulting, I understand that. So I had to get to the point where I'm willing to walk away because I can't go backwards. I could never go. It's almost like Jesus asking, you know, like, hey, you sure you want to stick this out? And my response as a disciple would be, I don't have anywhere else to go. I can't go backwards. I can't go back to that life. So I'm going to keep trudging forward. So those kind of hard decisions, that was huge, trying to get through that year. But then I get all excited that I need to be in ministry now.
Okay.
You know, because I love Jesus, so I better get out of the world and I better get into ministry. And here's another good thing where I've got a pastor that loves me enough to explain to me that God's given you the talent and he's given you the ability to make money in the marketplace. And quite honestly, you know, I'm always feeling guilty because I'm traveling all the time and I can't be at church active all the time. So it made me feel bad. And he's like, you know, probably the greatest thing you could do for the kingdom is we've done your spiritual gift in this. Your giving is one of your spiritual gifts. Go out in the marketplace and kill it and help us advance the kingdom. So now all of a sudden, you go and you win big projects. And I used to literally on the airplane be factoring how much money I'm going to make
and then
what I want to do with it for me to, oh my gosh, if we get this deal, we landed this deal and this is going to mean this much for Lori and I. And oh my gosh, we get to give the church this much and the kingdom and we're going to advance it. And then all that, you know, I need to leave the business world and, you know, go work for the church thing went out the window. It's the greatest thing that I think men can do in their profession is recognize God gives you that talent, that stuff he created you to do with your hands or your mouth or your brain, that like it's for him out in the world. Not everybody needs to be a pastor.
Kelly, thanks for sharing that. I mean, there's so many things. I'm hoping not only are some of our regular audience listening to this, but I'm hoping that they are saying, hey, would you listen to this? Would you listen to Kelly in this arc of his story? Because Kelly, I think there's two things that you've come to here. Is one is that you know, the end point was I don't necessarily have to give up the job. God is going to use my giftedness wherever he wants to use my giftedness. I'm just going to surrender it all. You know, yeah. I'm going to surrender my life, resources, whatever it takes to follow him. And for some people, that must have been very, very scary. But your giftedness was in that. But I've also seen some people whose gifts are leadership, and they are leading. And just like your gift is in leadership and giving, those two gifts then are the manifestation of what God is doing in your life. But there's other people who are encouragers and counselors and all across the board. There's teachers and disciplers all across the board. You said something else, though, and I want people to hear this. There came a point here where you said this, and this is exactly what Peter said to Jesus, when Jesus said, will you leave me too? And they said, where else will we go? You have the words of life.
Yeah.
And that's the point where you got to, as you said, where else are we going to go? You've got the very words of life.
Yeah.
That's an incredible moment.
It's been so enjoyable. The last, you know, coming up on 10 years, I'll tell you what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for everything I went through. Sure. And now on this backside, God has used Lori and I to walk alongside couples that feel like they might want a divorce. And we're able to authentically, number one, we're able to relate to loneliness and pain and hurt and rejection and bitterness and all those things that come about. But so to walk alongside that, so to be able to say the Me Too to them as well, but then to also get them, the biggest lie that I listened to back then was the things like, you'll be okay, kids are resilient, you know, those kind of things. So if your marriage is in trouble, I promise you, you want to talk to me and my wife. You don't want to talk to a couple that are 90 years old, have been married 60 years and said they've never raised their voices at each other. You want to talk to me. We're throwing stuff at each other, screaming, putting our hands through windows, you know, all that crazy stuff. And I want people to know, like, I get that. I get that.
Yeah.
But there is a solution here. So I'm thankful for that. I've seen I've been able to get involved in addiction programs here at Heartland and walk alongside of people. So it's not wasted. Nothing's been wasted.
Well, not when it's been redeemed. Unredeemed, yeah. It would have all been wasted. You know, it would have been a wasted life. It would have been wasted resources. You would have been chasing the golden ring out there on the merry-go-round of life. But it's not wasted there. And you used a key phrase here, because now you live your life authentically. Yeah. And you don't have to hide anymore, because that condemnation is gone. And rather than even, you know, it would be so easy, Kelly, to start to kind of paint a pretty picture out here again, you know. But here's the deal: is you're being authentic even in this moment so that others can live authentically. Yeah. You know, Kelly, I'm going to wrap it here, because this is a powerful place. There's some action steps. One is, you want to repeat what Darren said to you, because I want people to know this is the first action step about giving him a year.
Yeah. Give it a year. Be authentic. Get with other men. Lone Rangers or Dead Rangers. You got to walk along with other men.
Hey, do us a favor here and share this with someone else who really will grow through it. Like and subscribe it so that others will see this. And what a privilege, Kelly, to hear this story and to know that, you know, in my life and your life both, he continues to sand off rough edges, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
I look for it all the time. And he's so faithful. And fortunately, you have a Lori and I have a Delaney that helps us sand off those rough edges. And they do it with such grace. And they do it with, you know, it's not that they're not straight with us, but they do it with such grace. And then I'm going to ask people, if you have a story, and everyone does, if you have a story, we want you to share that story here, because your story will change people's lives. I remember our conversation earlier today, Kelly, when I said, you know, we're just going to see where this takes us. And you said, well, I will do anything for the kingdom. And that is just such a powerful phrase. I'll be honest. I'll be transparent. I'll put my life out there so that my life story might change a few. And that's what we want you to do. If you would write me at story.mosaics1@gmail.com, let us know about your story and have a time when you can get your story on the air as well. There's a few of you, like I've said, I've knocked on your door already. I've told you, I know your stories, and some of you have such transformational life stories that we want to have you on Story Mosaics as well. And then there's always the opportunity for you to grab a hold of one of the books that I've written there. Free books there on storymosaics.com. Just hit the button and you'll be able to get a free book from me, just because. And you're always afraid that there's a string attached. There really is no string attached to this. It's just something that I want to put in your hand as an opportunity for you to start telling your story. And I will guarantee you, the reason why Kelly buys breakfasts is because he tells his story over and over and over again. And lives are changed through that. Kelly, thanks so much for joining us on this day. You've had a long 2 days. Hey, have a good weekend. God bless you. God bless all of you who have joined us as well on Story Mosaics.